All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on the 27th day of November 2018. I do want to remind you that my newsletter is Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks can be subscribed to by going to miningstocks.com. Miningstocks.com. Also like to consider, have you consider subscribing to Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? He has done extremely well with the biotech sector and always has some really interesting things that he follows. Learns to know the management very well and can provide insights that I think his subscribers, well, they pay a nice price for, but if they follow his work closely and have the time to be next to their computers and trade, can do extremely well. And, of course, we have Michael Oliver with us in just a couple of minutes, and it's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. For almost any market that you care to follow, Michael covers for his more extensive service, but he also has a lower-cost service for that just focuses on the precious metals and the we'll ask him about that in a couple of minutes from now. Do want to thank you for listening to this show, making it the most popular show, or at least one of the most popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. And would like to really encourage you to continue sending along your questions, your comments, whatever they may be, to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number for taylor@gmail.com. Our sponsors for today's show, which we are grateful for because they make this show possible, RN Resources, Great Bear Resources, Novo Resources, Sandstorm Gold, Triumph Gold, Gold Mining, Inc., Uranium Energy, and Klondike Gold Corp. I've titled today's show Surviving and Profiting from Internet Warfare. Richard Mayberry, Peter Talman, and Michael Oliver are with me today. In a global world interconnected by computers from the seats of global power into our dens and living rooms, we are more vulnerable to intrusive snooping and theft than ever before, not only by thieves and by our own government and foreign governments, but also by corporations well connected to governments, not to mention renegade ex-military quality hackers. I do want to ask Richard Mayberry to discuss our personal vulnerability, how we can protect ourselves against internet intrusions, and some profit-making trends that he sees in this field as well to evolve as individuals and governments seek to protect their sovereign rights and their own security, their internet security. If time permits, I also want to ask Richard to comment a little bit on the U.S. economy and, in particular, his views on where we're at in terms of the velocity of money, which is really a big deal in terms of inflation. Richard always has a velocity index that he keeps track of, and I want to find out where he sees things now in terms of the U.S. dollar velocity. Peter Talman will update us on the new geological insights that he and his company has gained this past year from the drill program, very extensive drill program on the Klondike Gold project that they are working on. A very interesting story, and I think whilst the stock has really gotten battered from a geological point of view in terms of exploration and the insights that they've gotten, it's quite a story that you should be paying some attention to. But right now, I'm really pleased to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me, and he always has some great insights into the markets. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Good to be back, and it's good to tell our listeners it's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Michael, really good to have you with me. I want to ask you, you know, I got a very interesting email from a subscriber named Dr. Young. He's a new subscriber of mine. He says, at this time, I think his question is, at this time when, you know, you talk about these major market tectonic shifts that are taking place, and I think Dr. Young's questions are very apropos for the time that we're experiencing right now. And he asks, and I will pass this question on to you and let you take it as you will. While the mining stocks have great potential in the next leg up, what will happen to them in a market crash? Might it be better to wait for the crash and then buy or buy now and hold on? And I know, Michael, you're not necessarily convinced that we're going to see a crash. You've talked about this a lot of times. It might be a, you know, two steps down, one back up, two down, one back up, that kind of thing. But in either event, how would you answer? How would you answer Dr. Young's question?
Well, there was a time, in fact, from up until the 2011 peak in gold, in particular, where gold and miners went in sync with the S&P. Now they outpaced the S&P from 2000 through 2011. In other words, yes, while the S&P rose from its 2002 low and went up to 2011, then had a sell-off coincident with, you know. Anyway, there was somewhat of a linkage, so it can fool people. I don't think the linkage exists anymore. Our work suggests that, no, they're in opposite sync, especially since mid-2016. You got to remember, in late 2015 into early 2016 was a period of weakness for gold miners, right, and S&P. They all bottomed within a month or two of each other in that period, in a cluster of, you know, call it November, December through January, February of 2016. And then they took off. Well, the takeoff in gold and the takeoff on the upside in GDX is far bigger than what the S&P did during that period of time, up through mid-2016. But then at that point, gold and gold miners went back down. Gold didn't go down so much, it stayed in the upper half of the range. But GDX went down from like 30-plus. It had been at $12.40 in late 2015. And it shot up to over 30 and then pulled all the way back down to like 17 here recently, and now we're trading either side of 19. So this pullback since of the last 2 years plus has been contrary to the direction of the S&P, which has been more upside. But what's curious, we did a report this weekend, partly tongue-in-cheek but very real. A lot of times sentiment and feelings of people aren't in line with reality.
Yeah.
And if you entered optimally, let's say you bought the S&P in that late 2015, early 2016 period, or if you bought the GDX, the gold miner ETF, unleveraged, in the same time period, you're actually better off in the GDX right now than you are in the S&P.
And that's amazing.
If you tell
people
that at a Christmas cocktail party, they'll chuckle.
Yeah,
but
they won't
wrong.
Believe you. they won't believe you.
The issue is the entry point. Mm-hmm. And when gold turned up in early 2016, and specifically first week of February, we got bullish. We got bullish on GDX at that time as well. But price then was on the GDX was in the $14 area, a bit off the low at $12.40. And it's trading either side of 19. You do the percentages, and you'll see that that's actually more up right now than is the S&P as of Friday's close. Oh. In fact, if you do it 3 years exactly, we went back to the November 20th close of 2015, so 16, 17, 18, so 3 years exactly through Friday's close last year, last week, it shows that the GDX was up 44%, S&P was up 26%.
Wow. Well, that's that's very surprising.
Surprising.
Michael, I would say, though, however, that the GDX, of course, those are the senior miners, the big guys that are in the sector. And we know companies like Kirkland Lake and others that have done extremely well. The companies that I follow and the sponsors of this show during that time frame have not done well. They've gotten battered pretty hard, which is why I really like to I really like them now, actually, in a way, because I think at least the ones that I have confidence in, I think the upside could be very, very significant. If we finally get a turnaround in gold, but before we get to that, let me just ask you one other question Dr. Young had. You know, a lot of people are talking about a reset of the dollar. A lot of people are talking about a new monetary regime. This one is getting kind of long in the tooth since Bretton Woods, the breakdown of Bretton Woods in 1971. I haven't heard you talking about a new monetary regime, but you do have a sense of the dollar. And you're pretty, unless I'm wrong, you're very bearish on the dollar longer term.
It's hard
right?
to be that way, you know, but our technical work says, yes, you should be bearish on the dollar. As of May of 2017, in fact, it says be bearish as it came down from over 100 on the dollar index down to 99, we get bearish. Now, right now it's at 97, and it's had a good rally to get here. But we view it as a very strong counter-trend rally to the major new direction, which I think was set in May of 2017. So I don't think it's going to succeed. Now, the main thing you have to look at there is the euro, because euro is 57% of the dollar index.
Yeah,
so
right.
In effect, I'm saying, well, the euro is going to be okay. Well, how can that possibly be? And geez, if I can figure it out fundamentally, but technically it argues that. Now, I can fantasize some things that may come to be, but as far as the dollar reset, yes, we've commented on it at margin. The Chinese have been accumulating gold like crazy, and they're now the number one gold producer. I think it's an assumption that's valid that at some point in the next few years, especially as we get into more of a debt and a currency crisis, they're going to have a gold-backed yuan. And it wouldn't shock me if the Russians have a gold-backed ruble. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't shock me that there's some intellectual folks in Europe, particularly in Germany, who may not hold the reins of power right now, mm-hmm. but are increasing their position of power because of the diminishing position of power of the Merkels,
mm-hmm.
that don't like what the ECB has been doing in the forex markets and the debt markets,
mm-hmm.
and that they may want to reconfigure the euro in some manner, perhaps sure. backed by gold, I'm not sure. But if you get into a crisis situation, particularly led by debt, which I think is what we're headed into, it's going to affect the forex markets, and it's going to affect the thinking of people who can make changes in what central banks have been doing and might not be doing in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a reset.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's both motivated by thinking ahead of the curve, like maybe the Chinese are, but also events that will happen will reshape people's thought processes.
Right, right, for sure.
So let's don't do this again type of mentality.
Yeah. All right, Michael, we're just about out of time, but with regard to Dr. Young's question, and he says, if there is a reset of the dollar, would it be better to buy more physical metal and then convert it to the new currency to buy stocks then?
That's possible, because I think that at that point stocks will be in the tank and will have discounted the compounded error over the past 10 years,
mm-hmm.
namely artificial pricing of stocks up in the developed markets by central banks. If we can erase that,
mm-hmm.
Like get the S&P back down, you know, some deep level, back to 1,500, for example. I don't mm-hmm. have any projections, but if I think that would occur opposite to a gold advance, where gold then becomes the backing of certain major currencies, in
mm-hmm.
which case the gold both ends and it sort of disappears behind currencies
mm-hmm.
at a lofty level. But it's going to take a crisis to get that. But in the process, yes, stocks might be, not gold stocks, but broad stock market could be mm-hmm. vastly lower than it is now, in which case it might, in fact, be a time to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you don't see gold stocks being attached or in sync with the general equity market, I guess.
If they were lofty and had not mm-hmm. come down the way they have, when
right.
you take a GDX index from 66 and you take it to $12.40
mm-hmm.
from 2011 through 2015, what do you want? Mm-hmm. It's not going to go to zero. Yes, some miners might, but the index itself won't be replaced by other miners in the ETF. So
right.
the point being that they're only so low they can go, and they do reflect the commodity. And therefore, if the commodity isn't going to collapse anymore, and they've had their collapse, which looks to me like a theoretical zero low they made at 1240,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to go to zero. That therefore, they're literally as low as they're going to go. The issue
mm-hmm.
then is when do they turn in a more demonstrable way?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's too far away.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Michael. We are out of time. Thank you very much for your insights. And, of course, folks, Michael is looking, and his comments are made first and foremost from what his technical analysis is telling him. But he also is very much understanding of the fundamentals of markets and is a free market advocate, that's for sure. And we always love having him with us. Thanks so much for being with us again, Michael. Well, hopefully we'll do it again next week. All right. Well, folks, don't go away, though, because I'm going to be back with Peter Talman, CEO of Klondike Gold. And that's one of my favorites. Wow, you talk about companies and stocks that have gotten battered. Klondike Gold has really taken it on the chin recently, but I think it's got great upside, and Well, we'll hear what Peter Talman has to say about that when he comes back right after the break.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdes Reward Project. In addition, Novo has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Turning Hard Times into Good Times is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and the NYSE as SAND.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have Peter Talman with me once again. He's the president and CEO, and he's the director of Klondike Gold Corp. It's one of my favorite stocks, one of my larger holdings, and I'm really pleased to have him with us again. He is a very experienced geologist, an exploration geologist. He's worked more than 35 years in the industry, Canada, Chile, Mexico, Australia, and he's now working with Klondike Gold Corp, which is, I think, on to a very fascinating, very potentially very large-scale gold discovery. Peter, thanks for joining me again.
Jay, it's a pleasure to be back.
It really is good to have you, and especially now that the drill data is coming in from last year's drill program. We're going to be waiting for a lot of that data to come in yet, but I guess I should tell our listeners it's Klondike Gold trades in Canada under KG. Can buy it in the U.S. as I have under the symbol KDKGF. 96.8 million shares, Peter. That's about what I see recently. Now, you're selling, though, at a mere 14 cents in the U.S., which gives you a market cap of, I calculated, like 13.8 million in U.S. money, a little more than that in Canadian money. But your stock has gotten battered, which you never like to see. But, boy, I'm telling you, if you understand the what you have there, and I try to, I work hard at it, and that's why we have you here, because we'd like to know, is this just a cheap stock, or is this a stock with great opportunity? Well, Peter, you were at a professional conference, I think mostly geologists that you were speaking to from major mining companies, some of them at least, up in the Yukon. That's where you're doing your work, where your company is exploring. Despite the massive gold rush of the late 1800s, there's not been much serious exploration until you got involved recently, the last few years, regarding the source of that placer gold that was, you know, is one of the most spectacular placer discoveries in the late 1800s. What you started to view this from a geological perspective quite differently than had been looked at before. Perhaps you can tell in lay terms, tell our listeners, how you view this geology differently from what previous exploration, because there were some people poking around up there. I know one geologist concluded that, well, it must have all been eroded away over millions of years, and what you're saying is not so fast. You're finding a lot of gold there. But tell us, what is, you know, how do you view this differently from a geological perspective than your predecessors?
Well, I guess when I first, so it's Klondike Gold year four for exploration now, and really years one to three were spent expressly disproving the idea that all the gold is eroded away and there's none left in the bedrock. And we have done that, and as the years one to three went on, we found more and more gold and found concentrations of it that were, you know, they could develop into something potentially. In year four, it's what I just got back from this geology conference to report, but we spent the year mostly doing stealth science so that, you know, our investors generally are somewhat cranky when you tell them that you have to do all this basic geoscience to try to figure out stuff. They'd much prefer to have drilling going on all the time, which we did. But we had a really big geoscience program that spanned all gamuts of what you can do with geology to look at it, and came up with a completely different scientific explanation now for why the gold is there, when it is there, and what hosts it. So the importance of it is, first, we now, like last year at the end when I was talking to you, I was saying, look, we have these faults and we know there's gold in them, and we're, every time we go along that fault and in that area, we find gold. But there really wasn't an understanding, although we were getting there. So we've now spent the full year, and the entire team has contributed, as well as all of our consultants. And we have a specific explanation of how that gold occurs and in what rock types. And strangely enough, when I went to the conference, I was going to present this idea as a brand new, hey, look, this actually rewrites some of the geology of the Yukon. And I was speaking third on this particular day, and the first talk up in the morning was the geologist talking about the coffee deposit that Goldcorp mm-hmm. now owns, and they're our neighbor. Uh-huh. And she said the same. She preempted what I was going to say, basically, and said, "Oh, look, we have a new view of the geology and the timing, and it's this, not what other people previously thought." And the second talk up was on the white gold, so that's Golden Saddle, and a bunch of new discoveries. Again, another neighbor, Klondike, right beside us, and they presented the same structural data and system, and said, "Look, we're finding all our gold on these structures, and this is why it's there." They disagreed somewhat on the timing of it all, but then I got up and presented and said, hey, look, guess what? All the structures are the same as the coffee deposit, as the Golden Saddle deposit, and all these things are exactly the same. And I think that I know physically what happened as soon as I got off the stage and walked out. Again, the audience was geologists, and mostly all the majors, the world gold mining majors, send all of their senior geos to listen to these talks. And I was mm-hmm. approached by three of them consecutively right afterwards and said, we want you to pitch to us now. So,
good.
It's a scientific validation more so than an investor validation. But it's really important, and I think they instantly got the idea that there's potential there.
Well, that's I know that you've been talking about the you increasingly saw your project as a lookalike with the coffee deposit that was picked up by Goldcorp for a pretty penny a few years ago. So you have a lot of attention from the majors, which I guess is, you know, which you're happy about, right? It's better to have those guys interested in you because you're not going to mine this thing. It's really large. You're an exploration geologist, and some of those companies are looking for large deposits. I mean, all the big guys are looking for large deposits because they're running out of gold. They can't find it as fast as they produce it. And at least that's the case with most companies. So, go ahead.
Well, because my talk followed coffee, I wasn't aware of all the nitty gritty details. But what was presented in the coffee talk, I followed up and said, even the nitty gritty details of what we have occur also at coffee. Wow. And so to see this is not only just kind of sort of like that, it's exactly like that.
Interesting.
And the Goldcorp guys, of course, that's one of the major access routes. They drive through our property, get to coffee. There'd be some synergies there, some obvious synergies. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. yes, I suspect Goldcorp will be one of the groups that are interested.
Maybe we should just sort of review once again what you're doing there. You have a lot of drill data coming back yet because I guess the labs were jammed full this year. You mentioned there's going to be a tidal wave of data coming out. How soon do you expect to receive? How soon do you expect to have received all of the drill results from this year? And how extensive was your drill program? And what did you learn from it, essentially?
Well, it's the biggest drill program we've had yet. 87 holes in total. I think we've reported 50, so there's 47 holes left to come. I kind of prodded the lab while I was there at the conference, and they have now started to deliver the outstanding assays. So I was forecasting we'd be still reporting drill results in January. That may be true, but I might get most of them out before that. Have we learned? We've learned that our principal target, the Lone Star Zone, is big. We've drilled 900 meters of strike length down to or back across 200 meters. Pretty much every hole we've drilled in it has hit, and I believe there are extensions to it. So we have drilled a 1.6 kilometer long, spacing all in. Mm-hmm. We've also tried to drill our second best target or our second. We don't have much information from it. It's called Nugget, and mm-hmm. so we drilled 25 holes there. Still waiting for any assays from 2018. That'd be nice to see. But if we get something out of that, I'll be really optimistic that Nugget develops into a target that looks as good as Lone Star, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
And then we drilled a couple of wingnut holes right at the end, as they usually do, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 holes off in the middle everywhere. Who knows? Let's go learn something. And again, those aren't particularly critical. They're kind of like the Gold Run holes from last year, mm-hmm. the beginning of this year. Let's just go learn and try to get a better handle on the geology and where the gold is. So mm-hmm. I'm really optimistic that we do have a reasonably significant amount of gold contained at Lone Star, and we're hoping to develop something at Nugget. And now that we have a really strong exploration model, we have targets up and down the belt that look really good.
Well, I suppose once you get all the data in, you'll pull it together, you'll look at it, and then you'll start to think about what you're going to do in 2019, right? And do you have any thoughts about that now? Will you just continue on the Lone Star and try to prove up some sort of large resource? And if so, how soon might that happen? Or you got the Nugget Zone, you got other zones all over the place up there. This is a huge target, which is a disadvantage in the sense that it's just a lot to look at. It takes a lot of time. But what are your thoughts? Do you think you'll be sort of focused on the Lone Star to try to look at something economic there, or will you spread yourself out on some of these other areas?
We have $2.5 million allocated for drilling already. We have that in Treasury, so we're going to go drilling for sure. That's going to be somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 meters, which will start at Lone Star and Nugget, and the intention is, at least for the majority of that money, to outline. We're aiming for 2 million ounces of gold contained in a resource estimate that would come through 2019 and 2020 drilling. So we have money to fund the 2019 program. We don't have money yet for 2020. That said, there are some higher grade opportunities. We're going to go drill a couple of those as well in 2019. And see where we get to. But the objective is more or less focus on what has, obviously kind of bored the market is this delineation 50-meter centers. You keep delivering the same result as you did the last news release.
Uh-huh.
It somewhat bores everyone, but it's significant because we're adding ounces every time we hit. So,
yeah, I mean, you're doing it. The big news here is it's disseminated. It's not just high grade veins. It's a lot of dissemination over fairly long widths and strike lengths, I mean, drill intercepts that you've reported. And they're not spectacular, but they're good long intercepts with gold in them. And I guess your idea is to prove up ounces first, get to that 2 million ounce, and then you'll start to hone in on economics maybe somewhere down the road.
Well, we're kind of doing that now. But one of the things that the big guys picked up on in my talk was that the gold, at least on preliminary data, provisionally, it's free gold. So free gold sitting at surface. So it doesn't necessarily need, well, it certainly doesn't need, so far as we know, it's not heap leach. We can recover it with gravity methods, so it's cheap. So if you get a substantial amount of it drilled off, and again, it's sitting at surface, all this starts at surface, it's potentially economically, it has advantages over some of the other zones, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're trying to do, is find something that looks good and have enough of it that it definitely forms the basis of what could be either a significant regional play, because we believe there's gold all through the district, and we've identified new zones as well. The first thing now is to prove that there is something potentially economically viable of size, and that's what we're focusing on.
Yeah, well, I can tell you one thing as a shareholder. I hope that your shares pick up after this tax loss selling is over. I hope your shares pick up quite a bit before you do any deal with a major. That's all I can say. But I think that's probably something that will happen in 2018, or are you going to try to hold them off until you can until you get a better price? Or I guess it will depend on the markets too, right?
I heard the words strategic partnership. And so that doesn't mean financing at 15 or 20 cents.
Right, right.
And I'm not really that interested. As you know, we have two major, we have billionaire mining investors, two of them. More than that. But, you know, those are significant guys. They each own 14 or 13% of the company, and they're prepared to underwrite us.
Yeah,
anyway.
They don't have to sell your stock for the next meal. In other words,
exactly. Well, and they're both in for the. They're in for the home run, and that's what they want to see first: discover the source of the Klondike, all that alluvial, 20 million ounces of gold, and find something significant.
All right.
And so we're on track for that. So everyone is happy, with the exception of the share price, which.
It'll be okay. We're pretty
optimistic.
Yeah. Hey, good. Well, we have to leave it go at that, Peter. We're out of time. Thank you so much for updating us with your story. It is a good one, and it's one that I'll be watching, and maybe at these prices, pick up some more shares. Thanks so much for being with us, folks. Don't go away. We're going to be right back after the commercial break with Richard Mayberry to talk about some very important topics having to do with internet security. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Triumph Gold holds a 100% interest in the district scale Free Gold Mountain Gold Copper Project in Yukon, with a government-maintained road accessing their 200-square-kilometer property. The 2018 drill program has resulted in exciting discoveries to date, hitting the richest intersection ever in a porphyry system in Yukon. The company is well-funded and has a large institutional holding, including Goldcorp and Zijin Mining. Triumph trades on the TSX Venture under the symbol TIG and the OTC markets TIGCF. The website is triumphgoldcorp.com. Gold Mining Inc., ticker symbol GOLD on the TSX and GLDLF on the OTC, is the biggest bet for gold investors and legendary investors like Doug Casey, Rick Rule, and Marin Katusa, who put millions of dollars into backing the company, along with institutional investors. The insiders own over 20%. Gold Mining has strong cash and no debt. It's one of the top 1% of gold companies that has over 20 million ounces of gold resources. Visit goldmining.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Richard Mayberry with me once again. Richard Mayberry's U.S. and World Early Warning Report, and you should jot this down. It's the website is simply earlywarningreport.com, earlywarningreport.com. I've been a subscriber to Richard's letter for many, many years, and it's excellent. Not only does it keep you up to date with what's going on geopolitically, but it's also very helpful in terms of investment ideas that are really in tune with what is happening geopolitically. And Richard, like myself, we have a lot of years to look at in the rearview mirror. But Richard, unlike me, I think sees much further into the past and therefore is able to project things better into the future than I am. I think he's known as a 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000-year-old man because he goes back and has studied. He's such a student of history. He's written a bunch of books also from a perspective of a free market perspective that are really worth reading and buying through from his website. So, Richard, thank you so much for being with us again.
Oh, thank you, Jay. It's always an honor to be here. And thank you for the work you do. Your radio show here gives a viewpoint that the mainstream press just never goes near. And I'm sitting here reading your newsletter right now, too. And, for instance, this chart you've got on the manipulation of the gold market, it's very interesting, and I've never seen it before.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I don't want to waste time talking about that, but it's there are shenanigans that go on in the markets. But one of the things I really appreciate about your work, Richard, is that you look at the human nature, human beings, and how they behave. You know, we have these technological breakthroughs, and it seemed to be growing exponentially almost, technology, the IT technology, but there's technology in almost every area of our lives in biotech. You know, we heard that someone just started cloning human beings in China this morning, I think it was on the news. Technology changes, but human nature doesn't so much. And you point out, you started out your December issue by making a statement that I think our founding fathers would very much be in agreement with, but people today hardly think in these terms. You said, and I quote, "Politics is a systematic organization of hatreds," end of quote. Well, could you elaborate on that, perhaps, and give us? And you noted in the also some comments that Vice President Pence made that sort of, I think, relate to what you're talking about. Not to pick on him in particular, but just politics in general. Could you maybe just elaborate on what Vice President Pence had to say regarding trade? I think in China, maybe just your comments on this whole nature of politics and what it is.
Yeah. I'm not the first to observe that political power corrupts the morals and the judgment. And the reason for that is that political power is the legalized privilege of using brute force on people who haven't harmed anyone. And, you know, only governments have that legal privilege. And the people who have it, it's an evil thing. I mean, to use force on people who have not harmed anyone is an evil thing, and so the people who have that power are corrupted by it. And we look back all through history, and you see it over and over and over again that people are corrupted by this power. And the more power a government has, the more the people are going to be corrupted. And so, you know, these governments have not only relationships with their populations, they have relationships with each other too, and they tend to behave like street gangs. They have their turf, and they collect what the governments call as taxes, but it's really protection money from their populations. And, God help you if you do not buy whatever services they're selling. Because in the long run, they'll send you some nasty letters and all threatening you. But if you don't buy what the government's selling there during tax season, let's say, every April, then people with guns will come to your home and haul you away to prison. Mm-hmm. And the founders were very, very aware of the corrupting effect of this privilege. And so that's why the Constitution is written the way it is. If you tried to set up a private organization and run it according to the American Constitution, you would fail. There's no way you could get very much done, because the Constitution is designed to keep government from doing very much. They were afraid of it. They were afraid of anybody who got control of political power, and so they wrote that Constitution so that it would be, in fact, Jefferson referred to the Constitution as the chains of the Constitution binding down the government. They did not want anybody to get their hands on that power and be able to use it for whatever he wanted. And that's why the Constitution has such a convoluted way of making decisions and all the checks and balances and all that. So that's it. That's the basic problem. Political power corrupts.
Well, and that's an alien concept these days, because our universities and high schools and grade schools have taught kids to revere and to respect, almost like like we have Mao Zedong. Although now, of course, most of the left thinks it's the opposite. It's Satan in the White House and not their God Obama. But and they can't get enough government. We have to keep fixing everything. It was Ron Paul that pointed out, though, however, that it's that on this show one time he mentioned that really that's how they encourage people to hate each other, because whenever government passes one law, they hurt one group and help another. But that's basically what you were just saying, I think, in a way, part of what you're saying. But anyway, I want to get to the topic of your December letter, which is excellent. And I think people should really consider subscribing. It's a very modestly priced newsletter that most people can afford very easily. And you talked about cyber warfare, trade. You sort of linked in trade war. We have this specter of trade war that President Trump is seeming to wage, and you're very concerned about that. But then you sort of connected the dots between trade war and what might be going on in our own computers. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's pretty well known now that governments are waging a war on the Internet. The Internet has been made into a battleground by governments, and they each try to hurt each other or hurt their populations by distributing viruses and ransomware, all sorts of stuff on the Internet. It's getting worse and worse by the week. And the U.S. military is very, very concerned about it, because they know that somebody is hacking their stuff. Probably a whole lot of somebodies are hacking their stuff, and they're hacking the stuff of other governments around the world. One of the most outrageous things that just came to light in the last week or two is that, according to Defense News, the F-35 jet fighter, which is the Pentagon's top air superiority fighter, it plans to rule the skies for the next several decades. This is the latest thing, and it is they admitted it's very vulnerable to hacking. They've got a major problem. They found out that the support systems for the jet enable hackers to get in and manipulate what happens with the jet. And that's the case all through the Pentagon stuff. The GAO, General Accountability Office, released a report in October saying that the U.S. government's weapons systems are just, filled with loopholes that enable hackers to get in and control the weapon systems. Not that they're hacking personnel records and other minor types of data. They're hacking the weapon systems. And the Pentagon is practically helpless to do anything about it. And that's one of the main points of the article in Early Warning Report, is that as the government, well, backing up a little bit, as you know, I'm very big on the idea of ethics. I think that the decline of ethics is destroying everything around the world. Mm-hmm. Civilization is in decline because ethics is in decline. People mm-hmm. are losing the ability to tell the difference between right and wrong.
Uh-huh.
Well, governments are hiring brilliant people to be their hackers to try to defend against other governments. And these hackers learn how to use all these military programs. They learn how to write all these military programs. So you have essentially three levels of hacking in the world. There's the lower level, which is very simple. You know, you and I could probably do it if we were just shown a few things. There's the middle grade. Those are people that are really good at it, and they can hack a whole lot of things. And then there is the top grade, which is military-grade hacking. These people are astounding geniuses, and they can hack into anything. There is no, in my opinion, there is no civilian defense against military-grade hacking, and there isn't going to be. Because what's going on is governments are hiring these geniuses to hack other governments, and these geniuses learn how to do all of this, and they stay with the government for some number of years, and then they go off on their own, freelancing. They mm-hmm. are private individuals, and they know how to do all the military hacking, how to write the military programs. And so they go off on their own, and there are probably now thousands of them from the U.S. government, the Russian government, the Chinese government. People who used to work for these governments now are out on their own, and they are doing their own hacking, using things like ransomware to make huge amounts of money off of it. And so in order to combat these guys, the government goes out, hires more geniuses, teaches them even more how to do the military hacking, and then some of them quit the government. They go out on their own. And so the thing just ratchets up constantly. The skill of the pirate hackers increases constantly because governments are increasing it. And the idea that some civilian organization is going to somehow find a way to protect themselves against this ratcheting of this genius hacking is ridiculous. It's like thinking that the Chicago Police Department is going to be able to defeat the 82nd Airborne. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, and if somebody has evidence that I'm wrong, I'd sure like to hear it. But in my mind, the Internet is going to be just sabotaged to death by this proliferation of hackers out there. There's no way to stop them. And, the wise person will assume the day is coming, and I think it will be years rather than decades, and it could be even just months, where there will be so many frustrating things happening on the Internet where your ability to do whatever you do on the Internet will be disrupted so often and so seriously that people will just walk away from the Internet. They'll quit using it. And I think, that day is coming. And I don't think it'll happen this year, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it happens next year or just the year after, because it's getting worse so fast mm-hmm. because of the proliferation of these military-grade hackers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you in fact compared it to the golden age of piracy in your newsletter, 1650s to around mm-hmm. 1735 or so. And then you also compared it with a soldier to pirate career path of Jesse James and others after the Civil War. And, I mean, the point is that human nature doesn't change. And now we have all this technology that makes human nature, both good and bad, even more powerful, I think. It's what I'm hearing you say. You know, yeah. Jim Rickards, go ahead. You were going to say something. ethics. You know, you're big on the ethics, and I might mention to our listeners, early warning report. If you go there, you have a record. There's a website that I know is your website, also Ethics Solutions, which is a course you were teaching, and I never did. I'm sorry to say, never did follow up on that. But I think, and I really applaud you for your efforts there in that regard. Towards trying to help people with ethics, because that's really what it boils down to if we're going to live together in harmony on this earth. Did you had a comment that I started to interfere with?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say the website for Ethics Solutions is ethicssolutions.net, and that will explain it all to you.
Very good. Very good.
I'm kind of on a crusade here.
I know you are.
There's just no way to save our civilization without restoring ethics.
And I don't disagree. I don't disagree, and that's one thing you hardly hear about. And we need to talk to you about that more some other time. Jim Rickards said on this show that he doesn't really fear nuclear weapons, nuclear war, as much as he once did because of these cyber attack capabilities. Why to destroy the whole world when you can shut down your opponent by not allowing their airplanes to fly, or one thing, or their power grids to operate.
Yeah, right. This is a science fiction theme. Goes back a long time, many decades. Science fiction writers began to point out that human technological development was running ahead, way, way ahead of human ethical development. And now we're into the position where the technology is running even faster ahead, and the ethical development is actually going backwards. And, you know, science fiction writers have predicted, well, this this can't lead to anything good, and we're sure facing it right now. It's very likely that everybody listening to us has been on a computer at one time or another recently, and has had something screwy go on, can't figure out what it is. It's very likely that's somebody hacking you, or hacking somebody else that you're attached to, or something like that. And it's very likely, in fact, it's a virtual certainty, that everything you do on the internet is being monitored by somebody. They are learning about your personal life. Anything you put on the internet that is about your personal life is being stored and being sold to somebody. And one of the very worst things that's going on now is the toys that children are being given are full of computer stuff. And some of this, practically none of it, has any kind of security at all. And it monitors what's going on in your home. And there are some of them, according to an FBI report, the FBI released a warning on this, that some of these toys will broadcast to any pervert who happens to be plugged in and has the software to monitor these things.
Goodness sakes.
Which is not difficult to get. They will give the pervert all sorts of information about the child, including a photograph and the geographic location of the child.
Oh my goodness sakes. That's frightening. It's downright frightening if you're a parent, for sure. Richard, we're just about out of time. So much more to talk to you, to ask you about. You talked about how you see this coming. You mentioned a little bit ago in our discussion here that you thought that there would probably people would just stop using the internet. And I know that you talk through this in your newsletter, how people should adapt. Human beings are very adaptable, as you note, and how people should start to think in terms of adapting to a world that is just simply too dangerous to use the internet. And you mentioned there may be some soft internet usage. And I would just suggest, because there's just not enough time to talk about it, listeners, you need to subscribe to Richard's letter. Get this December issue. Richard, what are you charging these days for an annual subscription?
The normal price is $300, and I think we've got a promotion going on for $179, if I'm correct about that.
Oh, well, if that's so, I would just tell my listeners, there's so much more to talk to you about. You have investment ideas that you pass along too. And I would like to talk to you about those. We're just about out of time. You did mention, I do want to ask you about velocity, monetary velocity. You talk about that. It seems to me that at least in the United States, your sense of monetary velocity is starting to speed up, which would suggest that prices could be on the rise, right?
Right. It's really hard to talk about velocity in a few minutes, but
yeah, we don't have it. But it's just suffice it to say that your measure is suggesting that money is turning over more rapidly now in the United States, and that that could portend for inflation. I mean, the best thing for you folks out there is just to subscribe to Richard's letter. We are out of time, Richard. My apologies to you. So much more to talk to you about. We'll have you back again sometime very soon. Folks, that is all the time we have this week. Next week, Alistair McLeod is with me, Ivan Bebek of RN Resources, and Michael Oliver as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.